We are getting back at it here on Scrambled Eggs. Welcome to your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast, everyone. I'm Joe McCann with Phil Bush here on Crack Sidewalks. A little bit later in the week this week because of some work silliness and somebody had to go to Vegas and lose their voice. Phil, are you better now?
I am better. I have recovered my voice from a weekend of screaming at blackjack dealers and Packer games.
Did you take Marquette minus 16 against DePaul?
That's no, I did. You're welcome. You're welcome, Marquette fans, because had I, they would have lost by three.
Fair enough. Yeah. Or, yeah, yeah. Maybe not. Maybe they would have won by 15 or something.
Yeah, inevitably, I would not have collected money on that. It never worked
out.
Well,
we have a lot to get to in today's show. We're going to talk about a new addition to the team. We're going to talk about the game coming up against Creighton, look back at the last few games. Two expected wins, one tough loss. But, Phil, I want to actually start the show with a little bit of trivia today. On Thursday, Jimmy Butler was selected to start in the NBA All-Star game. So, hooray, Jimmy. This means Marquette has had a representative in the NBA All-Star game every year since 2005. That would be 13 consecutive All-Star games.
Wow.
Only one college has an active streak longer than Marquette. Could you guess what college that is?
Oof. I want to say, see, the question's asking, like, I should just go with Kentucky. But I feel like Kentucky players don't pan out at the same rate as you would think.
So at least not in the mid-2000s.
Correct.
Nowadays they do.
Yes.
So we're going back. So that's when I was researching this. I went, all right, well, Wade's been in every All-Star game since 2005. Jimmy's been in the last two. So I looked at 2016 versus 2005, cross-referenced a few colleges, and really not that many were in both games because there were a lot of high school guys,
right,
guys who didn't go to college at all that were in the All-Star game in 05, or guys like Yao Ming and Dirk and then a bunch of high school guys. But yeah, there is one college that I saw that has a longer active All-Star streak than Marquette. I was surprised.
Given their current issues, I hesitate, but I almost want to say it's UConn.
That's a good guess because Ray Allen was in there and Drummond was in there last year. But the correct answer is actually Wake Forest.
Tim Duncan, obviously.
Thanks largely to Tim Duncan and Chris Paul. And then there are a few other guys sprinkled in there. Josh Howard, I think, made an All-Star game. Jeff Teague's been in a couple games. But, yeah, they have a streak going all the way back to 1998. And
wow.
Tim Duncan made every All-Star. There wasn't an All-Star game in 1999. So he made every All-Star game from 1998 up until last year. And except 2012 was the 1 year Tim Duncan did not make the game. Maybe he was hurt or something that year. But Chris Paul did make the game that year. So, Wake Forest,
wow,
to my knowledge. If somebody like finds an answer that I missed, I don't think I did. But Wake Forest is the only college that has an active streak, All-Star streak, longer than Marquette's 13 consecutive NBA All-Star games.
That is awesome for so many reasons. Well done, yeah. Joe. Look at you bringing your All-Star game to the podcast.
Now, obviously, there are schools that have had more All-Star appearances in that time because Kentucky gets a ton of guys in the game every year now. But Marquette has had at least one All-Star representative, all of them Wade, up until last year when it was Wade and Butler. And now Butler has been selected this year. And I'm assuming Chris Paul, he has not officially been selected as we've recording this podcast, but I think it's just a formality that Chris Paul will be added to the 2017 All-Star game, continuing Wake Forest streak. So there you have it. So there's a little trivia to start the show. Who knows, maybe that'll become a thing. But let's do what we normally do, Phil, and let's talk about the most recent games for Marquette. Two expected wins against DePaul, and the Seton Hall game was a great win. I mean, you know, I know the Butler loss is freshest in our minds, but the Seton Hall game was a really nice win. But boy, that Butler game, Phil, that really stung just because, you know, something I tweeted before the Butler game was Marquette's season is really going to turn on the first unexpected result, right? And I say unexpected result when they either win a game that the KenPom projections have them losing or they lose a game that the KenPom projections have them winning. Because then all of a sudden you're going from either, well, if you get an upset win, then you're looking at, you know, 10 wins being a realistic possibility, whereas if you have an upset loss, then you're worried that you can even get to 8. And that Butler game was such a golden opportunity for Marquette to get that unexpected win, and then we could start talking about possibly getting into that 10-win range if we can continue with the current projections. And, boy, the way Marquette really, I don't know other way to phrase it other than collapsed in the second half was really disheartening on Monday.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you step back and you look at it, you know, emotionless, and let's say you never watched any of the three games, the good thing I suppose you take away is they're still on schedule. To your point, they are
on track. It just doesn't feel like they are right now because
well, especially if you take that in conjunction, the Seton Hall game was a good result, and given when they went to overtime with Luke Fisher fouled out and Hanif Cheatham having missed some free throws and the offense kind of sputtering in the last 2 minutes and Seton Hall seemingly having all the momentum with banked threes and, you know, all sorts of other shenanigans, it felt like that Seton Hall game was not going to go our way in overtime. And thanks to Marcus Howard. I'm not sure how old Marcus Howard is, but somebody else.
That's the new Todd Mayo is OJ Mayo's brother. That's the thing. And you know what? I will say this in defense of broadcasters around the country. We get tired of it because we're Marquette fans and we hear it every game. But if you're a national broadcaster talking to a national audience and you're introducing Marquette to these people who may not have seen them much, then say, oh, yeah, well, by the way, he's 17, guys, so you're trying to tell that to the new audience. But, yes, to us Marquette fans who hear every game that Marcus Howard is 17, yeah, it gets old.
I mean, I like it better than the Todd is OJ's brother thing, but that's for different reasons. But having said that, I mean, Marcus was great in the overtime in that Seton Hall game and really put the game on his shoulders. Otherwise, this could have been bad, right? I mean, a loss in overtime to Seton Hall at home – and then a loss at Butler, regardless of how that loss happens, even with a big win over DePaul, and all of a sudden they're behind schedule.
Right.
So looking on the bright side of life, if I can borrow Monty Python.
Do it at every opportunity.
All the time. They're still on the path where they're 9-9, and potentially they still have plenty of opportunities on the schedule to steal a win that they could have had at Butler, right? But to your point, that's what makes that Butler loss hurt that much more.
Yeah, because it would have been nice just to get that win you got to steal out of the way now, so you're not approaching later in the season where, okay, now we absolutely have to beat, you know, Xavier at home, or we absolutely have to, beat Butler at home or something like that. But yeah, it would have been nice to get a great road win because – a lot of the bracketologists had in their projections this week, had Marquette won that game, they would have been in the projected field for now. So, I mean, like, they're still right on the border, guys. So let's, you know, even if Marquette loses these next couple games against Creighton and Villanova as expected, there's still room to make up for that in the latter half of the schedule. But, boy, I mean, looking at the Butler game, Phil, what exactly happened? We harp on the defense and how it has struggled, and maybe Marquette played above their heads in that first half, but my goodness, things really unraveled quickly there.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, before we focus totally on the Butler game, I will say if you look at the last three games, especially, but Big East play generally, Marquette's offense is hitting another level. I mean, this is the best offense we've seen out of Marquette in probably – oh, I don't know, even before the DJO years. I mean, this offense is remarkably good considering the record. Against Butler, the first half especially, the second half they cooled off a little bit and had some dumb mistakes when the pressure turned up on them. But the offense looks fantastic. That Butler game is 100% about the defense just not only playing bad, like epically, historically bad compared to their normal bad, right? Like that was like the worst defense they've played in years. So, I mean, that's a good and a bad. Like you lost this game, you should have won relatively easily because you played horrific basketball on the defensive end. But then, in theory, that's an outlier, right? That doesn't necessarily indicate a trend, that because it was so bad, if they had played Anonymous Eagle in his four factors, and Paint Touch has talked about it a little bit, which are both tremendous resources people should be reading. But Anonymous Eagle talked about it in the four factors. The defense was so bad. They didn't have a single turnover in the final 23 minutes of the game. If they get just three turnovers and in theory get baskets out of that, they win the game. If they play defense at the worst game, at the worst kind of defense they've played all season, except for Butler, if they had played at that level, they would have won the game. You know?
Yep.
So it was just atrocious defense.
Yeah, but in something that Paint Touches was discussing with Ruby Q from the Anonymous Eagle, he said, you know, pretty much any good offense Marquette has played this year has had one amazing half against Marquette. And that, so you say it's an outlier, but at the same time, it's also kind of a trend that Marquette cannot play 40 good minutes of defense or even 30 good minutes of defense. They are almost guaranteed to play 20 minutes of bad defense that just gets shredded anytime they play a team with a halfway decent offense. Wisconsin rolled all over them. Obviously, Villanova tore them up.
Maryland, Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, all those teams just had huge, huge halves against Marquette.
Well, and yeah, I guess the question is, you know, from a, I guess defensively, I guess there is potentially a trend there. I have less concern about that trend. I don't know that that's necessarily there, but I guess the other question from a trend standpoint is this propensity to give up leads or to kind of crumple in the second half, you know. So Pitt had a lead and lost. Wisconsin technically had a lead, but that was without Ethan Happ. So, I mean, I think that was smoke and mirrors. I don't really count that one. Both the Seton Hall games, the Butler game, obviously. Is there a concern? Does the propensity to give up leads, is that a artifact of the defense being bad for a half, or is that representative of coaching issues, player issues, some combination thereof?
Maybe some combination. I know I've definitely seen people questioning, you know, how Wojo comes out of the half and Wojo getting out coached in the second half and maybe not making in-game adjustments. I know a lot of people would love to know why Marquette didn't even try a zone when they were just getting torn up by Butler in that second half.
Yeah,
just to try something maybe the coaching staff is struggling a little bit. Maybe Wojo is having a tough time making in-game adjustments going into the half, and maybe he gets conservative with a lead, or maybe he just assumes what's been working in the first half is going to continue to work, and maybe no adjustments are needed, and not adjusting for what the anticipated adjustments from the other side, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, like, well, they're like saying, you know, well, they struggle with this in the first half. I bet they're going to try this in the second half, and we need to be ready for this. What was it? It was 16 points, right?
And so it got to 18 with, like, 2 minutes into the second half. Marquette had an 18-point lead.
And then you end up losing by 8, just a 20-point swing like that. That's embarrassing is really the only way I can put it. Even though Butler is a very good team, man, you just can't lose that game when you have a lead that huge. They were shooting the ball well, and you know Butler's going to make a rally because they're a good team. But I mean, when you got a lead like that on the road, man, you got to find a way to hold on to that lead. And if you got to change your style a little bit, even if you're a team that likes to, you know, play up tempo, maybe you need to slow it down a little bit just to try to get the game over a little quicker.
Well, and I think what goes into the defensive collapse, there's a combination of factors there, right? It was definitely coaching. You know, you mentioned why didn't they go into a zone? Perfectly reasonable, because what Butler was doing in the second half was attacking off the dribble, right? And getting down into the paint and either scoring or getting fouled. So you go to zone or pack the line or something to stop the rim attacks. So zone was one of them. The other one is he played Matt Helt for about 3 minutes. The offense wasn't great, not necessarily. And this is part of what Paint Touches reviewed. The time Matt Helt was in the second half, the offensive issues in three possessions were not his fault. And on the defensive side, he made some good plays. So you question, especially after Wojo comes out in, you know, in his postgame presser and basically throws Fisher under the bus by saying, I don't know why he played like that. It's a mystery. Well,
it almost hinted that I wonder if change is coming.
Right. But it, more to the point, okay, it's a mystery, but hey, don't worry about figuring it out in the game. How about you put Matt Held in so you don't have to worry
right,
about
exactly.
the mystery? You know, so like get that taken care of. So there was definitely coaching issues. I mean, Fisher, when you're at least an inch taller than any other player on the team, you're a known post player, and you go 0-for-1 and foul out of the game. I think he fouled out of the game. You're just not playing well. Like something that's on players. You know, perhaps they didn't execute as well. And to be fair, I mean, Butler changed in the second half, and I don't make this as an excuse. I think it's more illustrative of the issue on the Marquette side. But the officials changed the way they were calling the game, and were calling a lot more fouls. Things that were not fouls in the first half were fouls in the second half. Fine, that's going to happen. That's what's terrible about college basketball is the officiating is so uneven. But the team should have been mature enough to handle that. Butler clearly handled it because I don't think it was unfair either direction. It was clearly Butler adjusting and utilizing that far more than Marquette did. So that's on the players and the coaches.
Yeah, and I will say this, though. I don't know if this is defending the team or not, but you know when the game is called like that, it will greatly favor a team like Butler who attacks the basket.
That's correct.
A lot
yeah,
more.
I mean, Marquette's never going to get that because they're a jump shooting team.
Yeah, I mean, the only guys who attack the basket for Marquette are Cheatham and Juwan. I mean, pretty much everyone else is a jump shooter. And I think somebody else pointed out that, you know, as the game wears on, since Cheatham seems to be trying to make up for the defensive deficiencies of some others on the team, he may be wiped by the last, you know, 5-10 minutes of a game. And maybe that's where you're not getting as much from him later in the game. But
yeah, I think it's a solid point. I mean, he's playing 35, 36 minutes and guarding the other team's best perimeter player. That's a lot to ask and have him contribute in significant amounts on the offensive end as well.
Yeah, so that leads me to what we touched on it briefly, Phil. So now, like, what do you do going forward? You got two games here that you're definitely not expected to win, either one. But will there be changes from the Marquette perspective? We'll talk about Creighton's issues here in just a second. But like I said, I mentioned a second ago, it almost sounds like Wojo might have been toying with the idea of playing Matt Helt more. There are pros and cons to it, obviously. What would you think about that if, say, we were to either A, play Matt Helt more, or B, even start him?
I think, especially given that the, like you said, these next two games are not necessarily expected wins by any stretch. They're expected losses. I do think you have to make a change. And even if you don't start Matt Helt because you don't want to completely destroy Luke Fisher's confidence for whatever, you have to have a quick trigger with Fisher and bring Helt in. You know, not let the game get away. He is clearly a better defender and a better rebounder, especially on the defensive end, than Fisher is. And if Wojo's not going to, you know, Wojo's got a particular defensive style that, and I'm all for his defensive style, but he's got players that don't fit his style right now. And if he's going to refuse to change his style, then he's going to have to play players that fit the style, right? He's going to have to play Juwan Johnson and Luke Fisher less and play Dwayne Wilson and Matt Helt more, because those guys can play defensively better. Now, I mean, because the ideal, you know, I was thinking about this, because really what Wojo wants from a defensive side is he wants to chase everyone off the three-point line and protect the rim and force everyone into some inefficient two-point shots. But the problem is if you do that and you can't protect the rim, then all of a sudden you're giving up a bunch of easy layups, right?
Right.
That's what happened against Butler. Right. So you got to get the players that play. I think the best defensive lineup is Marcus Howard, Hanif Cheatham, Dwayne Wilson, Sam Hauser, and Matt Helt, right? The 4H and a D. But But can that team win offensively? It's probably the weakest offensive set we have. So, yeah. You know,
yeah, that's the thing you can certainly like is even if Luke isn't scoring, I mean, he does, I think, open up things for other guys offensively because, I mean, he does, I mean, he can open up a lane for a guy. I mean, he passes the ball pretty well for a big man. I am concerned of what the offense would look like with Matt Helt playing extended minutes, but, you know, if the guards can shoot the ball well enough, maybe you wouldn't even need much from Matt Helt other than the offensive rebound.
But if Luke Fisher is going to take one shot in 24 minutes or whatever it was against Butler, I mean, Matt Helt can do that.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Would you make the change? Would you
I think you have to try Luke? I think you have to try it. I guess only that team knows what's going on at practice this week, and if a fire has been lit under Luke and he's going to give you a little bit more, but I can't expect him to drastically change at this point in his career. He kind of is what he is, right? Like I said, you're probably going to lose these next two games anyway, but maybe it'd be a good time just to test Matt Helt at a very high level. And even if, say, you lose these two games, but Matt Helt makes it closer or plays well enough in the post that you think, all right, maybe we didn't get the win here, but maybe Helt, what we saw from Helt here gives us optimism that we can go out and get a couple wins against Providence and beat Georgetown, and then, who knows, maybe even catch Butler or Xavier when we get them at home.
Well, and I don't know that I certainly don't think Matt Helt's in a position, just from a stamina and experience standpoint and his foul rate, that he's not going to suddenly be a 36-minute a player, you know, or 36-minute a game player. I think at best you're looking at maybe a 50-50 split, or something like it's 15 minutes of Helt, 15 minutes of Fisher, and 10 minutes of small ball with Hauser at the five or something like that. But you definitely got to make some sort of change or find some way to get more effective on defense, because the offense is plenty good enough. If you can just be average at defense, I mean, this team, I will say this, you know, I know a lot of people are down after the Butler game, but the way the offense is playing, if they can just tweak the defense a little bit, some way, somehow, I've never been more confident during the season this year than I am right now that they have a shot at getting into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to – I hate to use the word hope, because that's the thing Wojo said after the game, hope is not a strategy. But you're just hoping that your offense can outscore your defense and that your defense can – be average. You don't need it to be good. You can just be an average defense, or maybe even slightly below average defense. Hope you're not a terrible defense, and then you should win enough games. You're not going to win every game for sure, but you should just win enough games that you can get to that 10 win mark. And then, you know, anything. Then we'll see what happens when you get to postseason play. But yeah, I think just to see what Helt would do to the defense for extended minutes, I think is worth an experiment in these next couple of games.
Now, with these next couple of games, how much pressure is on Wojo to make significant changes or to demonstrate somehow he's doing something differently? Do you think if he makes changes and they lose anyway, does anyone care anymore or less?
I don't know. Thinking about it a little bit, you know, If he does change something, like say if the defense changes and say they play a decent defensive game and lose both games, I think the fans would, at least the sensible ones, would come out of it saying, all right, he tried something new and I'm anxious to see how it goes against a team that Marquette can beat. As opposed to, say, Villanova, who I think even a 29% chance of winning, as KenPom dictates, is a high number for
that's,
me.
That's aggressive.
Say he tries something new and it's just a total nightmare and they get blown out by 40 points, then I think then the concern would linger that, well, this team's never going to get to 9 wins. That, I mean, they're going to, they're going to get tripped up when they play Providence or Georgetown, or they're not going to get that extra win or two that they're going to need. So I think you can lose these next two games and still come out of it optimistic if you can – if you, I know there are no moral victories, but if you play well in these losses I say it like it's almost inevitable. But if you play well in two losses, I still think you can take positives out of it if you've tried something new and it seems to work a little bit. So it almost sounds like it's all on Matt Helt. That's probably not fair. But I think just trying something different defensively just to see if the numbers come come down a little bit or go up, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. You know, one lineup, and I don't know who the two guards are necessarily, or the two lead guards are, but one lineup I would like to see a little bit of, because I think it's a good mix and match. I would like to see Helt, Hauser, and Caton at the same time in the front court. And kind of maybe Hanif and Marcus Howard or something, put a little more length on the court. Overall, and maybe that makes a difference. I don't know. I just think we need to see some more lineup changes that de-emphasize Luke a little bit, and to a certain extent de-emphasize Juwan Johnson. Like, I just defensively, those two guys are killing this team more than anything else.
I still want to see Juwan out there more often than not, though. I know maybe he hasn't been that great, but I mean, I like his ability to get in the lane on the other end, though.
I love his offense, but the problem is he gambles too damn much on the defensive end.
Yeah, he does. I mean, all his big plays are when he gambles right. You know, when he gets that steal and goes the other way for a dunk, and maybe that kind of deceptively makes people think, well, he can play well defensively. But yeah, you're right. He does. I mean.
He would be perfect in a Tom Crean defense, right? He's got a case of the Jarrells, where he's going for deflections and steals, and as always, deflections is not a stat.
Yeah, it is for some people.
For certain people in Indiana.
Yeah, well, looking at this Creighton game, Phil, the one thing obviously we haven't talked about yet, which is the obvious concern for Creighton coming to this game, is the very unfortunate loss of Maurice Watson for Creighton, their star senior guard. Total bummer that he tore his ACL and is out for the season. Creighton is a top 10 team with Final Four aspirations, and now they lose their star senior point guard. And as Marquette fans, our heart goes out to them because it is eerily similar to the ill-fated 2009 season. I mean, I don't know how you could be a Marquette fan and see that Creighton situation and not think of what happened in 2009 when Dominique James broke his foot late in the year and what looked like a top 10 team with Final Four aspirations just totally, I mean, their hearts were ripped out. And they still made the tournament and got into the second round, but it just wasn't the same. But thing is, even though they lost Watson in their last game, they still played very well in that second half and still beat Xavier. But now that they've had a week to digest that loss, Phil, I'm very curious to see what Creighton looks like. I still expect Creighton to, I mean, they still got plenty of talent, and I expect them to win this game relatively comfortably over Marquette. But what are you expecting from Creighton? Is there a chance that they do come out shell-shocked in the first game where they announce the starting lineup and Watson is in street clothes?
You know, I think emotionally they'll be on the right side of things. I think they'll have a win one for the Gipper mentality going. By all accounts, Watson is a well-regarded guy in that locker room.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they'll come out emotionally just fine. The question is going to be what Marquette does to impact them in actual basketball. I mean, this is one of those cases where you go, if you want to gamble, and which I would argue you do, I would go to a full court press and turn Creighton over. Even with Watson, Creighton had some turnover. I was looking at the defensive. On the offensive side, they were 23rd in the country and not turning the ball over. So that's with Watson. Without Watson, do they turn the ball over more potentially? You got to think against Creighton, as well as they shoot and play on the offensive end, the more possessions you can create, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, I guess it's worth a shot. I guess it looks like it's going to be Khyree Thomas who's going to be taken over as the point guard for them. I mean, he's been their second most used point guard, but he does. I mean, his turnover rate isn't that bad. I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, Watson's is at 23%. Now he probably handles the ball a ton, so he's going to probably maybe have, you know, get a few more turnovers for that reason. But there is no way that losing Watson improves their offense.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they. I would expect it has to come down just a little bit, even if this team plays out of its mind and plays inspired ball. Now, the guy that concerns me, of course, is their freshman, Justin Patton, who really is the only competition for Marcus Howard for Big East Freshman of the Year.
Right.
I mean, that kid, I mean, he has been so good. And like, he's a, I guess he's a redshirt freshman, but still, I mean, he's up for Freshman of the Year. He's averaging 14 and 6. I mean, people.
And I don't know who guards him on our team.
Yeah, I mean, that's all the more reason for Helt to play a few more minutes.
Right.
Because, I mean, Patton could tear Fisher up.
For, well, I don't even know. I don't even know that could is the right word. Will.
Yeah. So he could be a big problem. So for that reason, it might be just like, Helt, we're going to give you a shot. Good luck. Here is a potential NBA first-round draft pick for you to guard. Have at it.
Yeah. I mean, because you're certainly not going to play zone against them. They have far too many shooters. They shoot at a better 3-point percent rate than we do, and we're pretty darn good. So, you know, you're just going to have to...
Number 2 effective field goal percentage team in the country, top 10 in 3-point percentage.
Yeah, that's good. So you and that's what's not good is having a pretty terrible defense go up against that. So it could get ugly. Yeah, I don't know who guards Patton. I mean, and the other thing is I would feel a little more upset prone, at least in predicting that, had the Watson injury occurred on, you know, Saturday and we're playing them Tuesday. But, you know, it happened.
They had 6 days to figure it out.
Exactly. Right? They've had plenty of practice time to at least adjust and figure out where minutes are going and where if and how that impacts their performance or changes their strategy. Because, you know, one of the things is Watson wasn't I guess he's a fairly by Creighton standards he's not their best shooter, but he's a fairly accurate 3-point shooter. So, you know, he was I always feel watching him like he's more of a slasher than a shooter. So I don't know if that changes things, if that throws their offense out of whack or not. But if nothing else, they can just throw it to Patton and him do
Patton things. Watson is just a guy who made everyone else better. I mean, he was averaging 8.5 assists per game. I mean, he was averaging 13 points, which is great. But I mean, he was pretty close to averaging a double double in points and assists, averaging 8.5 a game. So he was. We'll see if, you know, other guards Creighton plays will make everyone else better, and if they still get the open jump shots, which the way Marquette has played defense recently, they probably will get plenty of those. So, but you know, we'll see what kind of flow they have. You know, even without Watson, I certainly wouldn't still say Creighton is a potential Final Four team necessarily, but they are a team that is a top 25 team for sure, and could get in the tournament and then get hot and, you know, get hot in the tournament, sure, then you could be a Final Four team, but
well,
they're definitely not top. I just can't say they're a top 10 team anymore without Watson. They're going to suffer a few losses. I think, you know, Watson going down, I'm almost ready to go ahead and crown Villanova the Big East champs again, whereas before Watson went down, I think it was going to come down to the final weekend between those two. I think Creighton's got a few losses coming after this Watson injury, but you know, I think Creighton still could finish second or third in the Big East.
Easily. Well, it'll be interesting. I think the one thing, if Marquette can keep the game close throughout, you know, Watson was playing major minutes, so their backup point guards aren't used to carrying that kind of burden. So if you can, you know, maybe if you run full court at them, make it a 94-foot effort. And run a bunch of players at them. They tire out late in the game, and you can get them turned over and create some extra possessions and go for the win. But yeah, I think Creighton will will be slightly worse the rest of the season than they would have been, but I think there's enough talent on that roster that they're definitely going to be, you know, it's not like they're going to free fall away, you know, from the tournament altogether, and that's one less team we have to deal with at all.
No, they're still finishing top four in the Big East. They're locked into the tournament. They are not going to have that kind of a collapse.
If Marquette beats them, they will bounce back. I have no doubt. They play Georgetown after that. They'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll probably finish, I don't know, 4 or 5 losses in the Big East, something like that would be my guess at the most. I mean, I'm guessing they'll probably lose to Villanova again, and then who knows, maybe Butler or Xavier gets them at some point, and that's about it. Maybe they have an upset loss somewhere else. Hopefully Saturday.
Yeah, one can hope.
Yeah, so we can hope. But again, Phil, hope is not a strategy.
Right.
But if we're asking for predictions on that game, I am saying loss for Marquette.
Yeah, I think it's a loss as well. And I would also caution the fan base with this loss. Even with Watson gone, Creighton is still a very dangerous team. And with the Villanova game after that, again, even if they get blown out, I mean, it's not a good look, but even if they get blown out, they're still on pace, and with this season and the youth in the still the transition, this season's goal is make the NCAA tournament. This is not a Final Four team by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe we'll get there soon, but you know, don't go jumping off of cliffs because we lose to the two best teams in the Big East right now.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the projections. You got to use these two games, even though it's against great competition, to improve yourself the best you possibly can. Maybe it is time to experiment with Matt Helt, and then, you know, whether that lights a fire under Fisher, you get more out of him, or maybe just you see the team plays better with Helt. You figure that out, and then you have 10 games left in the conference season. You got to get 7 wins out of it, bottom line. And you're favored in most of them. You probably have, 4 or 5 50-50 games in there. See how Marquette does. So we'll see how they figure that out over the next few weeks. So, but not expecting too much this week, but I am curious to see exactly what Creighton looks like without their leader, Mo Watson, on the floor. A couple other business items before we get out of here, Phil. One thing that has happened since the last podcast, we mentioned it was a possibility, is that Harry Froehling is on board for Marquette, so he will be eligible. The transfer from SMU, the big man, the Australian, he's 6'11", 260. He will be a sophomore when he is eligible the second semester next year. So he is transferred to Marquette. You'll see him on the bench now if you haven't noticed him in the previous games, at least the home games. He won't travel with the team. But what do you think of the addition, Phil? I'm excited about it. I think it certainly gives Helt some help next year down low, so he doesn't have to depend on a bunch of freshmen next to him next year.
Well, I'm excited about it because we will get him next season, and you know, after finals wrap up in the first semester. So, and what's nice about it is he's in working on his strength and conditioning now. He's going to adjust to the team. He gives us another body in practice to challenge Fisher and Helt, and it does give us more depth and some more flexibility, so we don't have to. I have every faith in Theo John and Ike Ikewe, or however you.
I just say Ike Eek.
Yeah, Ike
Eek. I think it's EK. It's Ike EK. He's got, you know, his first name is much longer than that, but they call him Ike, but it's EK.
Right. So with those two coming in as freshmen, you know, you wouldn't want to pin all your front court hopes on two unproven freshmen. Front court players seem to take longer to get into the swing of things than guards. So he gives you depth and he gives you some flexibility. By all accounts, he may be able to play a stretch 4 or the 5. So he gives you a different piece. So I think, especially given the number of scholarships we have available and what the team composition looks like for next year, I think it's a great addition. I mean, I can't imagine what reason someone would have to poo-poo it.
Right. You're adding size, a guy who is potentially skilled, potentially skilled big man to pair with Matt Helt, so you get a little bit of experience with him. This is a guy, I guess Wojo was familiar. He said he's familiar with him from his international days, like when Wojo was with USA Basketball, and you know, he saw him in some international tournaments, and he knew of him and he liked him a lot. So it's a guy he's kind of been familiar with for a few years now, and I'm excited. Like you talked about, Phil, you can mix and match a lot of different guys. You can go maybe a little smaller with Froehling in the middle, a little more athletic, or you can go really big if you want to have Helt, Froehling, and Hauser all on the floor at the same time next year. That would be a possibility. So mix and match. You still got two scholarships to play with.
And hopefully he's got lateral quickness.
Yeah, hopefully. So I guess we'll see how good of a defender he is and rebounder, but happy to have him on board. And he's learning the system, and he'll be ready to go when he's eligible to play in the middle of next season. The only other recruiting note, I guess Marquette is interested in this Greg Elliott kid. He's a guard from the Detroit area. Don't know much about him. 3-star prospect, not necessarily too highly rated, but the Marquette coaches seem to like him a lot. I think he'd be I will say this, he's an interesting fit from a roster perspective, because as I've said before, Phil, if all the projected guards return next year, any freshman guards I think would have a tough time cracking the rotation, so he may even be a redshirt candidate next year. Yeah, so, but we'll see how it pans out, see if he even commits, but apparently there's a lot of mutual interest between Greg Elliott and Marquette, and again, Wojo still has two scholarships to play with as things stand for right now.
Well, and you know, if you're open, and we have next to no information on him that tells us one thing or another, but, you know, if you believe in recruiting stars, if he's a 3-star and he's an average prospect or whatever, then maybe the coaching staff is looking at him as saying, hey, let's bring a guy in that we don't, you know, if he's okay with it, that we don't have to give a ton of minutes to, that we can develop either as a red shirt or slowly over time, and maybe we get a diamond in the rough. With what's on the roster for next year and the year after that, I'm comfortable with taking one of those, especially with a scholarship left available after that.
Yeah, so that's just one other recruiting note to keep an eye on. I guess that essentially wraps up this Scrambled Eggs podcast. As always, we thank you guys for tuning in. You can always hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcasts. You can rate us and review us on iTunes, and there is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. You can like us there, post them all over there. Phil, we're just going to hope for a win this week. I'm really more interested in to see any adjustments Wojo makes more than necessarily a win or a loss, although I would be thrilled with an upset.
Yeah, we're gonna sit back and take it all in and see if there are any changes, and only panic should it appear that Wojo is throwing crap at the wall with no success.
And hopefully that is not the case. Until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.